Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you're drinking a frozen beverage from McDonald's, your brain may not like how refreshingly cold it is, but the rest of your body, oh yes, it's gonna relish every moment of it, because there are drinks, then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Get all the chill you need for just $1.69 from any size frozen drink, like a frozen Fanta Blue Raspberry, to a new ice cold lemonade. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
It would be a wolf's fun, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome everyone to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Network. Joining me this evening, I've got Tom and I've got Luke. Luke, I was saying beforehand, feels like forever since I've last seen you.
I know, man. I can't even remember the last time I was on, if I'm being honest.
No.
Been a while.
I think the last time you were on, we weren't playing particularly well. That's my only memory.
Well, that could have been at any time within the last 18 months, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, can you remember when Jimenez played poorly for the last time we spoke? Can you remember when Traore was so inconsistent? I was going to say, Luke, before we go into the show, do you fancy doing a quick plug for some of the football stuff you're doing at the moment?
Oh, yeah. So basically, obviously, I'm chairman of a grassroots club called AFC Wolves, and we are doing some free football sessions just to try and help people manage their mental health a bit better. I personally feel that football is a fantastic tool for helping to manage mental health. So every Wednesday, 7 till 8 at Goals in Darlaston, there's a free game of football. So if you want to come, have a free game of football, come down. We're also doing park walks around East Park as well, every Monday morning, 9 o'clock, meeting at Parkland Road side of the park, that entrance. Me and a great guy called Pete Tarbuck, who has his own mental health charity, and he does loads of fantastic mental health work, so check him out as well. But yeah, if you're struggling or you know somebody who might be struggling with their mental health, more than welcome to come along to the sessions. And I'm sure the great guys at the Fancast will retweet it and tweet it out for me again.
Of course, you know we will. I mean, it's not like I definitely didn't put you on the spot there to give it a plug. So. No, of course. I mean, it's one of them. As you know, big thanks to everyone who's already tuning in live. As good old Dean Marston saying in the comments, you know, well said, top work. It's, you know, it's great stuff you're doing, mate. So
definitely. You know what? Right, I'm going to be honest now. With all that's going on, like people are actually struggling. Like people are genuinely struggling. And in my opinion, local authorities don't give a shit. So, you know, is the responsibility now passed on to grassroots football clubs and the like to put on these sort of sessions and raise this sort of awareness? Because me personally, I feel that the support isn't there as much as it should be. I'm not saying it's not there at all, because there's fantastic charities and there's fantastic organisations doing some fantastic work. But I just think that the local authorities could do more around mental health support. So
I'll completely agree with you, and you know, the fact that, you know, it shouldn't take away from what you're doing, but you know, how community led it has to be is fantastic, and it will obviously get the buy-in from people. But it's a shame that there's not more out there. You know, I could go on my soapbox for days about the lack of football pitches and the
You know, I'm not gonna name names, but there's a facility within Wolverhampton, and to hire a football pitch now, you're looking at £100 for an hour. Where have grassroots clubs got this money from? It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And that's where the FI need to do more. You know, the FI are lacking as well, and that needs a massive reform. And I could rant about the FA all night as well, but I won't, because we lost 3-0 to Man City, and I'd rather talk about that.
I was going to say, should we rant about something else?
Yes, please.
That's depressing enough. You'd rather talk about really 3-0. Jesus.
I was going to say, as Conor Gabriel's already hitting up in the comments, didn't watch the game, so he's doing pretty well.
a great way to manage your mental health is to not watch Wolves.
You're not going to see him tomorrow morning, not him, are you now?
He'll be skipping around the park, he will.
Yeah, he's going to be on the other side having an absolutely whale of a time. But yes, Wolves did lose 3-0 to Man City. Even after I went on to TalkSport this evening, this afternoon, they said, oh, it's going to be a free hit. And I was like, no such thing as a free hit. We'll give them a game and we'll give them everything. And we still kind of got pretty resoundingly beaten. I don't know. I'm not saying the battle was over before it started, but when I saw the lineup and saw the front three of Traore, Jimenez, and Hwang, my heart did sink a little bit. I mean, Tom, what was your sort of first thoughts on the lineup?
People say we're just saying it after the event, but I think we all said it on the group, didn't we? We weren't happy with that front three. I think I was pleased it wasn't a back 3/5, depends on how you look at it. I was pleased about that. And I was at the midfield three. That's the midfield three I'd have played as well. But not that front three. Hwang, you could make a case for. I think Hwang's done all right. He's not set the world alight. He's done all right since Lopetegui's been in. Traore has been awful. Let's be blunt about that. And Jimenez is useless. He's fucking useless now.
You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say anything bad about Jimenez. You're not allowed to. No.
That's it. I think he's buying into it. He's running around a bit, but I could do that. He's not the bloke he was. We need to all realise that. And he's not the bloke he was. He was a genuine, like, nearly, you know, he was an elite striker before, and he's not even championship at the moment.
Sorry, but you know what, Tom? Looking at you, you slightly look like Raul Jimenez, you know.
I've had that before.
I love how much Tom just gets compared to, I was going to say, any sort of Hispanic Portuguese footballer. Just like, set mould.
Now you do, man, you do.
I'll take that. You're in a bad looking fella. I'll take it.
He's all right, ain't he?
Yeah, you're too shabby.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's the side of your head?
Just get that eye patch in there.
I was going to say, Halloween's already sorted for you next year. Fancy dress. Perfect. I was going to say, with Jimenez, I mean, he was a bit non-event today, but at least it wasn't as bad as last time he played against Man City. You know?
When
he gets like a reckless sending off, you know, could always be worse.
Still just got through 45 minutes.
Yeah. But Son at least came out instead of him this time. Because it was like just before half time last time.
I think it was literally like an injury time of.
Yeah, it was like. It was one of the most brain dead things I think I ever remember seeing, which I realised probably isn't the right choice of phrase for a man who suffered a really serious trauma. But anyway, we'll swiftly move back that. I was happy to see Lamina start Luke.
Yeah.
Instead of Matinho.
I like him. He looks like somebody that we need. I feel like Tom mentioned, that midfield three, that is our midfield three. Because with all due respect and the fantastic career he's had, Matinho's done, finished, kaput. Traore, when he comes back from injury, Traore B, not Traore A, is another good option. But I think our first choice midfield three has to be Neves, Nunes and Super Mario. I think they work really well with each other. They complement each other. Mario as well. Lamina, sorry, I'll stop calling him Mario like with fucking bezzies. Lamina, I said it in the group chat a couple of weeks ago, dead cert for your bet builder anytime booking. However, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt today. What did he get booked for?
Well, I was going to say that was the first point. That was the first point in my notes about refereeing, and like, don't get me wrong, the referee had no like impact on the result. Not like, you know, Liverpool in the cup or anything. But it did feel a little bit tough on Wolves.
How are we on the counter attack? Raul gets fouled by Lewis and Lamina ends up getting booked. That is just poor officiating. And within the first 15 minutes, you could see what sort of game the ref was going to have. And again, you know, we're doing a podcast about Wolves and we're not even 10 minutes in and we're already talking about the ref and how poor the ref was. It's week in, week out now. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. I was thinking of like the De Bruyne one where, you know, when it's a good team who does it, it's tactical. It's smart. Smart playing, things like that. Mm. And part of me, the shithouse in me goes, yeah, I kind of agree. But the only way you're going to stop players from like, you know, I was going to say your Fabinho's, your Casemiro's, basically any half decent player, is if you just book them straight away. It doesn't matter if it's in the first 15 minutes or it's in the last 15 minutes. I find it really frustrating, especially when like you can see, you know, you talk about Lamina being a bet builder. Look at the likes of Neves. Neves is assumed for 10 bookings a season most of the time.
A
lot of it is just through trying to do the tactical fouls, but not quite getting away with it, in my opinion.
I'm sure when we played Liverpool, did Traore not get brought down on the halfway line?
In the second
half against Liverpool. No foul, no card. And you just think, those fouls are, they are tactical, but they need to come with a booking. You're stopping a counter-attack. You know, everyone who has played football knows what those fouls are for. It's because you're stopping the counter-attack and you're being a bit of a shithouse. But on the back end of that, you've got to take the punishment, which is a yellow card. And when you see the refs not giving out yellow cards for those sort of fouls, when a team's wearing a Man City badge or a Liverpool badge or a Manchester United badge, but then he wants to go and book Kilman for his first offence for what was a good tackle. All right, it was a bit firm, but come on.
I mean, I've watched it back. I saw a fan clip of it. It was almost like a perfect shot of it. And tell me about 10 times. I don't quite know what the ref's seen. The only thing I can think of is he thinks he's lent with his shoulder, but he hasn't. He's just moved the left side of his body. Perfectly blocked the ball.
I mean, do you know what? With the Kilman tackle, you'd take a free kick and be like, you know what? Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with it, but free kick to Man City, fair enough. But to get the yellow card out, and then that absolutely kills the team. Doesn't just kill Kilman, it kills the team. Because Kilman then has to be very, very mindful about every tackle that he's putting in. It also means the player around Kilman have to then have that in the back of the mind as well. And I'm sure these refs do it on purpose, you know, because it was his first offence of the game as well. And I'm not saying, everyone should get one free hit, but it's not like he's gone in knee high with his stud showing. It's not his fault that he's physically bigger and stronger than Gundogan to warrant a yellow card. But, you know,
it's not what you said, Rich. Though, it's thinking, look, they think about the team. If it's us against City or someone like that, we're roughing them up. We're playing a game. We're playing a dirty game. We're trying to, like, you know, win that way. If it's City and we're countering, it's smart. It's clever. You know, they know what they're doing, or they rotate it. I mean, it's classic. It's classic Pep ploy, isn't it? They rotate the people doing the fouls. But
and it even goes
the refs aren't wise to that now.
Yeah, and it even goes to the specific players as well, because, you know, if it's, you know, Gundogan, or I was going to say basically anyone in that Man City team, well, you know, you need to give him a foul because it protects the players and things like that. And it's, I don't think I've ever heard any commentator, pundit, external to Wolves say that Adama Traore needs protection from opposition. It becomes a laughing joke. I even saw a clip on Twitter, you know, obviously it is very clearly a bit funny that he has baby oil on his arms. The reason why he has it is because he gets fouled so often, he dislocates his shoulder when he falls over. Yeah. Like, that's why he has it. But, oh, it becomes a meme. And, you know, it's niggly. I know it's not had any real impact in the game, but it just makes Wolves' life a bit harder. Yeah. And, you know, we're not a physically aggressive team. You know, as far as I'm aware, I'd be fascinated if there's any, you know, neutrals watching this or whatever. But, you know, we're not like an in-your-face, you know, even like Brentford, who've got a bit of bite to them or whatever.
Yeah, I forgot about that as well, that one that you just brought up, Luke. I think when Juan got pulled down, it wasn't even it wasn't just Lamina, was it? Lopetegui got booked as well.
Yeah.
So from that, our counter-attack, we've had two people booked. Yeah. It's bizarre. Like, I mean, again, like, where's the warning for Lopetegui or whatever for having a go? I mean, I know he's animated on the side, but I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But then having Bruno sat there doing jack shit, just standing there like a lemon.
How many bookings is Lopetegui on now? He's racking them up.
Again, you know, when I'm assuming that Lopetegui got booked for arguing with the ref or questioning the ref or whatever, but when the decisions are so consistently shit, of course the manager's gonna lose his head a little bit. And you know, I'm not condoning sort of abuse being thrown at referees because I don't think it should be, but surely you've got to allow a manager to ask the question, like, why haven't you blown for the foul? Why have you given the foul against us? Why have you just booked my central midfielder who's, you know, you don't want Lamina on a yellow card within the first 15 minutes because that is his game to put the tackles into break up play, you know. And again, sometimes you feel like, is it a tactic by the ref just to make it a little bit more difficult for shit teams like us?
He sets his stall out, doesn't he, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And going back to Lopetegui one, I mean, I don't know, I bet Arteta hasn't been booked this season. And if you watch him on the sidelines, he's like much worse than Lopetegui. Yeah. It's the badge in it. Let's face it, stuff like this, it comes down to like the badge, and it's a bit, it's really, really annoying. Mm. And I can see why refs don't like us, because we moan and we roll around a bit. But come on, there's got to be a little bit of consistency somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I think I find the manager's really frustrating. Because you look at, literally any of the top six managers, look at Klopp. Fuck me, you know, and then Lopetegui comes in, and again, the perception is, you know, oh, he's aggressive towards referees, and you know, it's that difference between passionate and angry, I guess, and I don't know, it's frustrating. But you mentioned Lamina, because I thought he was a bit, you know, he was one of the positives today, and I remember his time at Southampton when he sort of first played, and he always sort of struck me as a sort of bit of a fancy Dan. Like, obviously he's got the talent, but he didn't necessarily have that bit of work rate. But from what I've read, and now obviously what was in a Wolves shirt, he seems to enjoy that physical aspect of the game and really sort of being a proper engine room type of midfielder. And again, screams the exact sort of player we've been missing the last few years.
I feel with Lamina and Neves, well, hopefully in time, allow Nunes to get forward a little bit more and offer us a little bit, offer the defence more protection through his style of play. You know, because he looks good in the tackle, his positioning looks good, he's quite physically strong as well. But like you said, Rich, he can play as well. You know, there was one time the ball came into him and it's just a little flick in between. You know, let the ball come in between his legs, flicked it back to Collins, I think it was. You know, he's got a little bit of flair to him. I think when we first signed him, I wasn't sort of overly enthusiastic, but I feel like he's going to be a really good addition to the team / squad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, in fact, you know, you say on paper, signing a 30-year-old midfielder who's had a couple of stints in the Premier League, never really set the world alight playing here. I couldn't understand why it doesn't, and neither did it for me, but as I say, he seems to have kind of really matured his game and still kept, you say, that bit of flair that made him essentially a Juve player. But at the same time be able to support the team as well. And he almost seems like, you know, we've got Babacu Traore, who's almost like, what is he, about 10 years younger than him? If he's 30 or so. And it almost feels like that's a player that Babacu Traore could be coming the next few years. So I'm interested to sort of see how his role develops in his team with Lamina. Because say he's 30. Will he be here in 3 years' time? Maybe not. But hopefully he's going to be that bridge to kind of bring us through, you know, someone like Babacu Traore, maybe, as Jafo says in the comments, low risk, low cost, loads of experience. What's not to love? Completely agree. Let's talk the goals, because it turns out Erling Haaland's quite good at scoring them. First one, do you think Collins could have done better, or do you think he was just Haaland?
I'm not sure. The problem is he's got Haaland running onto it. He's got 5 yards on him, hasn't he? So he can run onto it and jump a bit higher as a world-class striker, whereas Collins has got to do it from a standing jump. And I don't think he can call it an error. You know, maybe for a Van Dijk, he'd probably clear it. But I thought Collins was excellent first half. I thought he was really good. I think he was the main reason we weren't more than one goal down, to be honest. Definitely. I thought not just the goal line clearance. I thought he was really good and really commanding.
Statman Dave put his stats up from the first half today, because I thought first half he was superb. He was comfortably our best player. So first half, Collins, 100 long balls completed. Probably only played about two passes, but we'll skip over that. 97% pass accuracy, 4 interceptions, 3 ball recoveries, 1 goal line clearance and 1 block, which in 45 minutes of football ain't bad really, is it?
No, I agree. I think it's a mistake. People say he's got a mistake in it, but I don't think you can call that a mistake. But, I think it's Haaland at the end of the day, and he's got 5 yards on him. He's a big, massive unit. Not many centre halves are getting above him there, I don't think.
People say that Collins has got a mistake in him, but let's not forget he's only 21. He's a baby, really, in footballing terms. So he's got a lot of developing to do. He's got a lot of experience to gain. And footballers do sometimes have mistakes in them. I don't see Collins as a player who is sort of having mistakes that lead to goals every game. You know, it's what mistakes has he really made this season that have led to a goal? Off the top of my head, I don't know. There's probably one. Exactly, Matt. I totally agree. Every player does have a mistake in them, you know. I feel like that's just a bit of a cheap shot at Collins because he's not coming playing like Maldini.
No, I think it's got a lot to do with the Dawson signing, his age, the age as well. I think they'll complement each other quite well. Because I think, let's face it, if one of the centre halves is dropping out, it's going to be Max, isn't it? If he's playing a two, and I think they would complement each other quite well. Someone like Dawson talking him through his game, he's obviously got so much experience at this level, and it can only improve. It'll only improve Collins, I think.
Yeah, I think Collins is obviously his game's just increased tenfold, hasn't it, since Lopetegui's come in and Tommy interview today. It feels like Collins is like his main man at the back now. And my sort of take on it is I think because of his size, he looks a bit gangly. Yeah. And it almost feels like he can look a little bit clumsy and almost not quite know what he's doing despite knowing what he's doing. You know, like the same way Richard Stearman, who maybe that first season we had him when he was obviously a good centre-half championship level, but still looked a bit raw and might have had a rick in him. But he never really, again, similar to Collins, it wasn't like he was doing like Titus Bramble howlers. But you'd kind of, he'd look exposed if he's, you know, in a lot of open space and things like that. And I'm not saying that, again, in like 5-10 years time when he's still here, he's just going to become, we say, fucking brazy. But it feels like game after game after game now, we're talking about how solid he's looking. And I almost can't necessarily remember the time he had a bad game now.
I think he's been...
Has he had a bad game since Lopetegui came in, do we think?
He wasn't great at Everton, but I don't think anyone was, to be honest. That first half, I think the back four looked horrible.
Yeah. But then second half, half time, everyone stepped up, didn't they?
Yeah. I agree. I think it's just his confidence, I think. Like I say, he started all right. I think people forget about, pre that red card. As soon as that red card hit, he lost all his confidence, I think. And obviously the team lost their confidence, so he didn't feel as confident how he was playing out of the back and what have you. So I think up until the red card, I think he was really, really good this season before that. And then since Lopetegui's come in, he stepped up again. So I've got no concerns with him at all.
No. I think we'll talk more about Dawson in a bit. But yeah, he's a player I'm really kind of keen to see him keep progressing second half of the season. So we're going to the break 1-0 down. And it's interesting what Lopetegui said afterwards, that he felt he made a mistake with the lineup. Pretty much in terms of how they wanted to start the game. So Lopetegui, almost true to form, switches it up, makes a triple sub at half time, which, again, I don't know whether it's something that's a really good thing because it shows how proactive he is, or whether he shouldn't be having to constantly making these triple subs.
I think
he does do an awful lot.
He's not scared to make a change when it's not working. And, there's plenty of times in games and seasons where it's not going to work. And I think it's good that a coach can stand there and take accountability for his mistakes. Because how many times down the years have we had coaches where they've made a mistake, but they still haven't changed it until the 75th minute. And by then the game's gone. Yeah. So I'd rather him identify his mistake early and
rectify it.
Than letting the game sort of be lost already and then thinking, I'll make a double change now on 75. I know it does help now we can make five subs, and that's completely changed the game of football for me from a tactical point of view.
Mm.
So obviously when you could only make the three, it restricted you a lot more than it does now. But yeah, as a coach, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to get it wrong. But I feel like the signs of a good coach is when you can identify the issues and you've got the sort of nous and bravery to change those mistakes.
Mm.
And so I don't see a problem with it at all.
And I guess have the buy-in from the players as well to be able to kind of go, we know it's not working. How are we going to fix it?
And I think from a player's point of view, you're thinking, this ain't quite working. We need to fix it because this motherfucker, he ain't going to be scared to bring me off. Whereas if you've got a coach, the game can you know as a player if the game's not working, if the game plan's not working, you know when you're on that pitch. But if your gaffer ain't going to make a sub till 80 minutes, you can think, you know what, I can still coast. He ain't going to change it for another half hour anyway.
Mm.
But when you've got a manager who, if it ain't working after half hour, I'm changing it. It makes you as a player think, well, do you know what, I've got to step it up and try and make it change myself, which is equally as important as a manager sort of making those changes, in my opinion, anyway.
I hadn't really thought too much in terms of a five sub being allowed now, because obviously it gives him that flexibility to make subs earlier on and rectify things with more changes and having more intervals to do it in. But he's adapted to that a lot quicker than any of our other managers who have had that opportunity. It's not quite worked, then just make the change earlier. And I find it fascinating that from a coach specific in Lopetegui, he's capitalized on that a bit better than other managers we've had.
Yeah, I'd say so. There was a definite mentality shift at half-time as well. They were pressing really high. That actually is a bit really frustrating, actually, because I think we actually started the second half pretty well. It looked a lot more threatening. And then the penalty is just so annoying. It is a penalty, but it's just so annoying. He doesn't even know he's there, does he? It's just a coming together. It's really unfortunate how it sort of came about. Because like I said, there was at one point I almost wanted to freeze frame it because I think we had six players pretty much in and around their box trying to squeeze them and pen them in, trying to play like City. Whereas we didn't have it, we didn't have six players in their half, I don't think, at any point in the first half. So it wasn't just personnel, but I think it was also a mentality shift. And unfortunately, that as soon as that penalty went, that was it, really, wasn't it? We weren't going to get back from two goals. So it's a bit frustrating that we couldn't see how the game would have panned out a little bit more if we'd have had a bit more time at 1-0.
Yeah, it was really frustrating because obviously we got the goal, the penalty 5 minutes into the second half, and we started those 5 minutes were Wolves' best period, I guess, with the tactical change and how we were working in it. It's frustrating, but yeah, I mean, the penalty is just annoying.
Oh, because, right.
Again, the thing I find really annoying is I can't imagine Wolves getting a penalty like that.
In my opinion,
do you know what I mean? Like a Wolves player just ghosting in.
I don't think it's a penalty personally, but I can't say that because it's just been given against Wolves. So obviously, I'm not going to think it's a penalty.
You'll get the same hot water as I did when with the Notts Forest one. We can't be after that, Luke.
So you mentioned Notts Forest. If that's a penalty, how is it not a penalty on Nunes? And then the referee, is that Peter Walton, that idiot? And he came out and said, well, according to the PGMOL, there's a difference between in the box and outside the box. So they're coming out with the bollocks there, but then something so similar happens and then it's a penalty to them and then it's not a penalty to us. And you just think, what even is football now? What are the rules? What are the terms and conditions? Because I ain't got a fucking clue.
Because I was going to say, to drag it on, I was going to say, refereeing and officiating the rules of the game. One of the reasons why football is so fundamentally popular and so bloody brilliant, in my opinion, is because it is an incredibly simple game. Yeah. That's sort of why it works for a lot of the time.
Yeah, but you can pick up and play.
But when you compare it to, you know, things like rugby, cricket, you know, even if you just do like invasion sports like American football or whatever as well, they're so complex. And like, for I won't kind of go off too much of a tangent, but in rugby union they've had a rule change about tackling all of a sudden, and I can't almost get my head around just implementing a, you know, a sweeping change like that, and the players can't keep up with it. It's not to the benefit of them, really, is it?
No.
It's not to the benefit of the people, of the consumers, which is us. It doesn't make the product better. I'm not saying, oh yeah, just strip it back completely to when you can have, like, you know, Vinnie Jones two-footed challenges or whatever. But it's got to be like a simpler middle ground to it, and the players need to, in my opinion, have a better cultural shift around it in terms of their attitudes around, you say, rolling around easily. Because, you know, an official claim that's the reason why they have to do certain things. But it doesn't half make it, you say, a less enjoyable watch as well. It's not even if I'm watching my own team as well. It's when you're watching other ones. To be fair, yes, I know the, as Hungry Like Wolf says in the comments, the rugby ones around protecting players due to head contacts and potential long-term injuries. But there was another clip as well I saw in another match as well. I sound like I watch loads of rugby. I've watched like two bits recently around how, you know, essentially a player got the ball from the back of a scrum, I think it was, because one player hadn't binded at the right point. And just all these complex laws, it just doesn't... I find it confusing. And say, when you get increased laws around offside as well, I can't tell you what an offside is to the truest extent of what it can and should be.
You know, football's not working when the only person that understands the laws of the game is Stuart Hall. And that's only because he reads the bloody manual every year in Whitby.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, obviously we're not experts, but we're confused around the laws of the game. The players are concerned around the laws of the game. The professional pundits are concerned around the laws of the game. The commentators, I think even the managers, everyone is so confused because, in my opinion, they've taken away all transparency now. Mm. And you see one incident, and then the week after you'll see something similar, but the explanation from the referees or whoever, the PGMOL, it will be different, even though the incidents were so similar. And it's mind-blowingly frustrating.
Speaking of frustrating, Man City's third goal, because I think you can make a point for at least two out of the three goals, particularly the third goal, were avoidable. And have we almost seen the basement level of Jose Sarr now, who has been, for 18 months at Wolves, been a really strong performer. But his form, his form's almost done the exact opposite to Collins this season. And it's just slowly and slowly slumping, because I have genuinely no idea what he was trying to do at that moment. I think it was, it was almost like he was told you need to pass out from the back, and then thought, well, that is the only thing I can do. And, you know, for a player of his quality, that was a sad and frustrating thing to see.
There was no pace on it whatsoever. Mm. Like, anyone could have intercepted that. You could have got bullied out of retirement. He'd have intercepted that. It was just piss weak. I don't know what the hell he was doing with it. But it's not the first time, is it? I mean, he had a couple of these in him. He got caught out a couple of times last season, but he got away with it. And now he's sort of seems to be running out. But again, I'll go back to that. His brain just seems frazzled with stuff like that. I'll go back to that one against Liverpool when he tried to pass it back to Neves when he was already pretty much on his goal line. Mm. He's keeping so much about decision making, and his head's not right at the moment. In which case, he's not making sound decisions, and he's got so much ability. It's really frustrating. But I think he'll be replaced in the summer. I'm pretty sure. There was rumbles, wasn't there, already, and we were a bit, surprised by it right at the start of January, and they said they were going to look for another keeper to push him, or, well, they sort of said, oh, potentially a number two, but there's someone who can push Sarr. So I think Lopetegui's got his number, I think he'll be gone in the summer.
I think with the way Lopetegui wants to play, blatantly wants us to play out from the back. He will want a goalkeeper who's a lot more comfortable with the ball at his feet. Because while Sarr isn't the worst kicker of the ball in the world, he's certainly not Patricio. He's not great. And like you said, Tom, his decision-making as well isn't great. So I think you're right. I think you're spot on. He will get replaced. And I'd love us to go in for the lad from Liverpool. Is it Kelleher?
Yeah.
I think he'd fit us perfectly.
See, I don't want to sign him because I don't think we should sign players from Liverpool, personally. Because they charge twice as much as any other club.
Well, after the way they've done us the last couple of seasons, we should get him for about £2.50.
Yeah. Exactly. They can take...
We'll give
him
Hoover back.
Yeah, exactly. we'll end up paying him twice as much or something like that. It would be ridiculous. I don't know. It feels like, again, the perception around Sarr's changing, because I wouldn't necessarily call him a, sweeper keeper to a true extent, and being almost, a defender in goal, as it were. But I never saw Sarr as being bad with his feet, but he seems to not be able to quite understand the process of what Lopetegui's trying to do in terms of passing out from the back. It's almost like Sarr's distribution is long distribution rather than, short fires out to your fullbacks or centre halves.
And I think that's the issue. Like Tom said, it's his decision making. It's not like he's a terrible kicker of the ball, and long distribution, yeah. But when we want to play out so short and so regular, like Lopetegui obviously wants us to do, that's where then the goalkeeper's decision making comes into it, and he's struggling because he's too erratic. He's too erratic. Which is a shame, because he's a great character. He's not like he's a terrible goalkeeper, but if we're talking about Collins has got a mistake in him, then Sarr's got three or four. You know what I mean? It's if you want to point fingers of mistakes, I don't think you should be pointing it at our 21-year-old centre half. Maybe look at our 30-year-old goalkeeper.
About that, and he likes when he's 30-odd.
And but I think Tom's hit the nail on the head with the word decision making. We need a goalkeeper with better decision making, because he's frigging giving me a heart attack when he's kicking the ball out for corners twice.
Yeah,
in like 2 weeks, you know this kid can't play it from the back.
Yeah, I'll say apart from that, obviously Wolves had a few half chances. I think there was a penalty shout as well, I believe, for Sarabia. I mean, again. We'll park for referee stuff for one side, because we all know Carl. I think we've had our vent, and we know where we all stand on it. But I guess I know I didn't want to say this is a free hit of a game, but in terms of Wolves this season, how Wolves have done under Lopetegui, I don't think this really, touches the size. To be honest, we know Man City are obviously a good team, and as we've had a comment on YouTube, big thanks to everyone as always, but Hungry Like the Wolf said, Man City win, 16 out of 20 teams each season. They're going to beat us at some point. And, at least 16 out of 20 games. And unfortunately, it was us today. It's not going to be defined by...
Our season's not going to be defined by losing 3-0 away at Man City in January. And again, we don't want to use the term free hit, but our season's not going to be defined against our next fixture against Liverpool. Our season will be defined against Southampton the week after. The West Ham game last week are the games that are going to define our season. It's not a free hit. We don't want to lose games ever, but at the same time, I think we need to be realistic as well. Man City are probably the best team, or one of the best teams on the planet. They need to have an off day, and you need to have a good day to get anything from the Etihad.
Yeah, I agree.
And that didn't happen today.
Yeah.
No. We were average to poor, and they were pretty average as well, to be fair. And their 11 is 3 goals better than our 11 when they're playing at the same,
Sort
of ability, if you like to put it that way. Like you said, like Luke, absolutely right. We have to play great and they have to play poor if we want to win. We have to play good, they have to play poor if we want to draw. They didn't get out of second or third gear, and neither did we.
Yeah.
We lost.
Yeah. And we've got 2 weeks off. I say 2 weeks off. We've now not got a game for a couple of weeks. So hopefully that gives Lopetegui a chance to continually whip them into shape, because it has been a full on fixture list since return as well. So hopefully they can continue to work on some of the sides of the game, and which they definitely have been doing. And again, aside from this game, in terms of how we're getting more players forward and things like that, but there's still plenty of work to be done. Hopefully in that next 2 weeks, we might sign a few more players as well, or see a bit more transfer activity. So we're going to take a quick break, and after a break, we're going to talk about some incomings and outgoings. Hello, welcome back, everyone. So, after, I guess, a bit of funny business, could you say, from West Ham, Wolves have finally signed Craig Dawson for £3.3 million. Pounds. I was going to say, slightly confusing, because he's 32 and it's 3.3. I feel like just 3.2 would have had a nice mirror for me, personally. But, as we talked about earlier, shrewd signing.
I think so.
Have you seen how angry the Albion fans are?
Yeah, I know.
The all window. Absolutely loving it just for that. Even if he never kicks a ball for us, I don't even care. Just watching them melt down that one of their sort of former heroes is now playing for us in the Premier League.
Is it that much of a bad thing for the, like, Jonny and Lescott played for the Albion, but you don't see like me burning my mascot photo with him. get a grip. It's Craig Dawson. Don't get me wrong, solid pro, decent defender. Realistically, what did he actually do at West Brom? Because they did fuck all for the last decade and a half, apart from beat us 5-1. Do you know what I mean? It's not like... Is it just Albion Twitter being Albion Twitter, do we think?
They're salty from the from their game the other night, and I think not recovered from that yet.
I think they're genuinely annoyed, but Albion fume aside, I think, like we touched on earlier, great signing for to sort of mentor Collins and Kilman. They can learn from his experience. He can talk them through games. It gives us more strength in depth. You know, we've actually got a squad now, which we haven't had for about five seasons, because Nuno just wanted to have 13 players, it felt like. I think it's, you know, like Jafar mentioned in the comments earlier, low cost, low risk, pissed off the Albion, what's not to love?
Yeah. I was going to say, we talk about Albion fans being pissed. Another set of fans who are pissed is West Ham fans, actually.
Yeah, that says a lot.
Yeah, you know, like, we've seen enough players come and go from Wolves, and you get to sort of gauge reaction, but, you know, they seem genuinely sad to see him go from on a personal level, and I think there is a case of him, he is obviously moving back here because of family, because he was linked with us in the summer, and he was linked with Aston Villa as well, and I'd get it, you know, he's in his mid-30s, he's wanting to go back to where his family has settled, but for us to get a solid signing from essentially a Premier League rival, whichever end of the table we're going to be in, for pennies in football terms, right? You can't beat it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I think we've done a good job here, and there's definitely a shift in the club, isn't there, in terms of, you know, for every foreign signing, dare I say, and, you know, a bit of an unknown, that actually we need to match it up with a player who has got a bit of Premier League experience about them. And, you know, having, I don't know, it feels like it's a bit scary. We're also almost trying to, you know, think tactically about signings and squad balance at the moment.
Yeah, well, Luke said earlier, it's like the Lamina thing. It's just smart signing. You put it in a smart signing camp. That all that talk at the start of the window was they wanted more experience in the squad. So the last three signings have been Lamina 29, Sarabia 30, Dawson 32. They wanted Premier League experience. They've got that in Lamina and Dawson, and then wanted a bit of English. They want some English players in there, and they get that with Dawson as well. So they've been true to their word at the start of the window. They've clearly identified stuff. There seems to be some sort of strategy, unlike the sort of scattergun approach that we saw in the summer. It just makes it, it's just smart, just clever. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. I was like, genuinely, like, I don't know, transfers are a bit of a risky business, but it's kind of nice to see, like, the project, you know, actually having a level of planning and, like, very conscious planning with it. Since we last spoke, I think it was rumoured, Tom, but Guedes has finally gone, I was going to say, back home to Portugal on loan and already scoring. But let's be honest, the little ghost never really quite fitted in, did he?
Nah. He's been awful. He was awful. That's fair. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hope he goes there and scores a bag full, because we need to keep his value up, because he's never going to play for us again. So we've got to get as much money as we can back. I think the only thing with this one, because he's a Mendes client, it should protect some of his value, because it, you know, he'll just spin his little wheel and he'll find someone who wants to stump up the cash for him. And if he's, let's hope he scores a load of Benfica and that club's Benfica. But yeah, he's awful for us, bad attitude. And the only thing I'll say with Jimenez, yeah, he's been bad, but at least he looks like he's really put himself about trying a bit. Guedes didn't even have that. So it was shit, and he did look like he didn't care, and that's just a combination that's just never, ever, ever going to work.
I was going to say, he almost had that sort of, oh God, I feel awful for saying this, but he did have that little bit of the Johnny Foreigner, it's got a bit cold, I don't really like it here. But considering we were chasing him for 3 years,
He's the type of player in Sunday League, you just say put a reducer on him after 2 minutes, and then you won't see him again for 88. It's just classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't fancy it.
And like, it almost felt like when he played up on the wing, he kind of, I like wingers who stretch the play. It almost felt like he went hiding. And, you know, you can't have that when you're at this level of football, when you're in a relegation fight or, you know, battling bottom half of the table. You just can't be doing with that. And when I look back and you kind of have, we had Pedro Neto, who appreciate is younger, but really like worked on his game and works off the pitch to become a better player. Then we brought in Trincão last year, and sort of towards the end, he at least kind of started to show a bit of promise. And I'm not saying I think we should have signed Trincão. I could have understood why we maybe have potentially loaned him for another season or something. But then Guedes, it just, just frustrating, really frustrating for me. Talk has gone quiet, though, on the Free João Gomes campaign, though, because, I mean, I just need him to sign for someone now. Whether it's Wolves, whether it's Leon, he just needs to sign for someone at this point. I can't be doing any more retracted transfer saga, in my opinion. Just free for man.
It's just weird, isn't it? Because if he goes to Leon, it's obvious that he doesn't want to be there. I don't even know what's going on with our bid, but like Flamengo now rejected it. Have we, you know, is our bid completely out the window? So if he doesn't go to Leon, and Flamengo are just going to say, well, you're not going anywhere then. Like, what the hell is going on? If he doesn't come though, and I hope he stays at Flamengo and they're going to administration because they needed £15 million to pay off the tax man, and then we get him on a free. Because, come on, let's be honest, man. What they've done is, it's totally underhand. It's bang out of order. You can't accept an offer. Well, I suppose you can, but like morally, it's just completely wrong, isn't it? When even your own asset slash player is pretty much saying, come on, lads, let me go. Like, is it not sort of like exploitation in some sort of way? Like, they're literally holding the man against his will to stay in a country that he doesn't want to be in anymore.
I find football transfers fascinating at the best times, but I think for me, they're really transactional. Like, you put in an offer, it gets accepted, it then moves on to the next stage, and you can't kind of go back from that initial bit. But I guess it's like on that bit on Football Manager, where you get all the way to the end, and you still, like, even if the contract's been confirmed, you can still put yes, no, delay. Mm. Or it feels like they've just gone like, yeah, no. And I said the other day, you know, Wolves didn't quite get it right with Enzo Fernandez for multiple reasons as well. And I know, again, tin hat theory, however you want to describe it, it does seem like we are struggling to really secure the signing, because from South America, that they're kind of really working hard on the scouting element of it and not quite pulling through on it, which is really unfortunate. And, you know, Flamengo don't come across particularly well in it. Neither did Leon, to be honest.
Nah. Well,
you know.
Leon, yeah. If you think they're interested in the player, put a bid in. It's Flamengo for me. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with... You certainly can't say anything about, like, our recruitment team on this deal, because they've done what they thought needed to be done. And then Leon have just come in and put a spanner in the works, and Flamengo have... I don't even know why it's got to this position. Like, if the player wants to go to a club, then just let him go.
For money that they obviously thought was acceptable, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. So why is it, you know, why is it any different now? It's a tricky one for it, because people are saying, well, just pay the extra million or do this and that. But it's a principle thing, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah.
And I sort of do respect the club for sort of saying, well, no. You know, why should we, you know, sort of change now? It's a tricky one, because I think we all want him. I think we can all see the potential that he's got. And I don't think it is just a case of the extra million. I think it's the payment structure from what you read. But I almost respect the club more for sticking to the guns and being like, because otherwise you're just going to be taken for a ride for every, you know, with every club.
over next transfer that comes in, we'll get bent over. Wolves have always, under Foden, by and large, we've been sort of fairly solid with some of the transfer fees. We've had a few haywire ones where we've overpaid odds, but I think for a lot of the younger players, we tend to try and be conservative on it. So we'll see. We'll see. Whether we get to like it being a transfer deadline day one, or I think genuinely might happen is he doesn't move to anyone. He just ends up being in Flamengo and being a bit pissed off. And whether we go in for it in the summer or not, who knows? But I say plenty of time to for us to make any dealings in the window. Do you see anyone else going at this point, boys?
If we get a striker, I can see maybe one of them going out, and Raul going out possibly. They've said today, haven't they, Mascara's going out on loan. They pretty much said, look, this allows Hobbs has said, look, this allows us to send Mascara on loan.
I think the
Felipe deal, from what you read now, is dead. I think the Dawson deal put pay to that. But if he was going to come in, then I'd have expected maybe Totti to go on loan as well. But I don't think so. I do want to see another striker, I must admit. I don't know how Kuna didn't start today. And I don't know, there must be a reason behind why he didn't start. He should be starting each game. But even then, we need another striker option for me. I'd look at a watch of that Coventry striker. He looks all right. He looks pretty decent. He looks a bit like a poor man's Haaland. He's got a bit of everything, big lad, but he's got a bit about him, So I wouldn't mind a little look at him.
We'll see. I was gonna say, be interested in another strike, but I agree, someone needs to go, but there's plenty of deadwood, so we'll see. Right, we've got a few questions from Twitter Corner, just the four of which I think we've got a couple of people who are watching live on YouTube. Make sure you like, share and subscribe if you are watching. Big thanks as always. So Hungry Like the Wolf asks, what's happened to Jeff? Other than meeting Hulen in the new manager first day video, he hasn't appeared in for five player videos. Used to be on the mall saying hi and giving them the address in his office. Is he hiding now? He has a more photogenic Matt in the spotlight. I mean, I just think he's just trying to like stay out of the camera a bit. And, obviously Jeff's had a lot of bad PR the last few years, and, having a different face in front of it makes a bit of sense.
Or it might be that we've actually made the correct decision and we're keeping Jeff away from footballing decisions. And he can just manage the sort of business side of the operation, because he should never have been involved in the football side of things anyway, especially transfers. So maybe that decision has been made and he's got a new job role. Maybe he's now the, senior number cruncher guy.
I'll check his LinkedIn post later for the senior. Yeah. Be a good business card. let's see what else we've got coming up. A good one from Andrew Wright. On the subject of escaping the drop zone, which members of the current Wolves squad would you least like to help you in an escape room, and which ones do you think would help you get out of there in no time?
Matinho for the one I want, probably.
Yeah,
hates to lose anything, so sign him up.
And he seems quite smart as well.
Yeah,
I think he'd be able to work out the puzzle in front of him.
I'll take Neto with me. Just because he'd be a laugh. A laugh. And I'll struggle with those sort of things. So
at least have fun for an hour.
Yeah, a couple of cans, have a laugh.
Luke and Pedro on the beers. I was trying to think of who I don't think would be particularly great in there. I mean, is it lazy to say Adama?
I was thinking you could take Adama with you, because he would just smash the doors off anyway.
Just say,
you stand at the opposite side of the room, right? Put your head down and just run as fast as you can through that door.
Get us out. Get us out. What else have we got? Jeffo asks, which one of the injured players would make the biggest impact to our
Pedro
season
Neto.
Right now?
Pedro Neto.
Yeah.
Pedro Neto, best footballer in the world.
I'd actually go Kolasinac, actually. I think he'd be all right. I haven't said, you know, just from what we saw before he came in, and we need a striker. I think we've got wide midfielders covered net, but not centre forward. So
makes a lot more sense, Tom.
Yeah. But who would be better to have, for Luke to have beers within an escape room?
Well, that's it. That's
although
a different question.
Although everything you read, Paris Sasaklanich is a very lovely man. So you might have a nice time. I think he'd be the sort who'd bring you the beers with him, though, Luke. Whereas I don't see Pedro Neto doing that.
What, bring you beers?
Yeah. I think he'd expect you to supply the beers.
Hey, Neto would get on the bag and everything, I reckon. Right? fun times.
Right, last question from Todd. Which movie will you be watching to help you forget this game? It sounds really bad. I literally, and bearing in mind, 3 out of the 10 of us who do this do a film podcast. I can't remember the last time I actually watched a film.
No.
That sounds so bad.
I just watch kids' films all the time now. Yeah. Just Disney Plus on loop. The only time I don't watch Disney Plus is when I'm watching The Wolves. That's
It'll probably be Encanto. Or it'll probably be, I was going to say, Tiana's Princess and the Frog. Most likely, or Tangled. Yeah. You want my honest answer?
Yeah. It's just constant. I might cancel Disney Plus just so I can't do it anymore.
Can you film your children try to access Disney Plus after you've cancelled it? Because I know what the reaction would be in my house, and it wouldn't be pleasant viewing to not be able to access anything princess related. So yeah, I might just try and do that for laughs, like, and then I might get a new telly as well. So potentially it could be a win-win. I get content and a bigger telly.
Yeah, you might also have to find a new house.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
And a wife.
Yeah. That's probably a good point to wrap up the show, as any will be back in a couple of weeks now, because we're not in the fourth round of the FA Cup, so no game next weekend. We'll hopefully be around to go through any of the latest transfer wheelings and dealings if and when any of them come out. Make sure you stay up to date with all things Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. It's at Wolves Fancast. If you're watching live on YouTube, thank you so much for watching. Make sure you've liked the video and you've smashed the subscribe button. And I was going to say, even if you listen as a podcast, just have a look and go on as well. It'll be very appreciated. And also shout out to 90 Min as well for all your support being part of the network. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Luke.
See you later.
It's goodbye from Tom.
Bye, Wolves fans.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.